Welcome back to Issues Etc. Just before the break, we heard Star Parker co-hosting The View. She was there as a very rare conservative and Christian voice. She was kind of an oddity among the other ladies sitting there on the panel on that morning talk show, television talk show. Look, they, you know, why is it you believe? What do you think about evolution? What does it mean to be born again? And she availed herself well of the opportunity, rather bold, I would say. If she were to be the replacement for Rosie O'Donnell on The View, would that make you a viewer of The View? Or can you think of someone else in politics, in Hollywood, in public life, who you think, if you had the choice to make, should replace Rosie O'Donnell as host of The View? Maybe a regular guest to this program. I can think of a couple, actually. 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Hey, Jeff, you know who I think would make a good replacement? I mean, it's a snowball's chance, but, and we've only had her back on just recently a couple times, but Colleen Carroll Campbell, don't you think so?
Excellent. Excellent choice. I didn't think of that one. I thought some other people,
she's,
but yeah.
She's very smart, very articulate, and I think she could avail herself of the. She could fill that chair pretty easily without any trouble. Not, I don't think they'd make her the host, but I think she'd be a good panelist.
Well, she's already done TV. I don't know if you're aware of this. She's been on Donnybrook several times.
Oh yeah, I know that. And the other name escapes me. It'll come back to me in a moment. What about the rest of you? 505-7850-1800-730-2727. I'm telling you, at ABC News, they're worrying as much about, or at ABC, the corporation, they're worrying as much about who fills Rosie O'Donnell's chair on The View as they do about who may be the next anchor for their news. Probably more, because there's more revenue hanging on the listeners of The View or the viewers of The View.
Where do you come up with that idea? More revenue from The View than nightly news?
It's got better ratings, better advertising. Absolutely. You're talking about that slot in the morning on ABC.
Well, it's
their ratings went through the roof with Rosie O'Donnell.
It runs at different times all over the country. It's not like a live show.
I know.
So it's running all over the place on ABC affiliates across the country.
You know, just all the, all the better. I mean, there's a reason why. Don't you think there's a reason why they took a risk of putting Rosie O'Donnell in that chair? They knew what they were getting there, right? They knew that there would be the eventual meltdown. They knew that they would eventually. This wasn't going to last forever, but they were looking for viewers, and they got them. At least the news was they got ratings beyond their wildest dreams when Rosie was sitting there.
But I do think ABC News is number one in news ratings right now.
I know. Who's the host there?
Charlie Gibson.
They'll never get rid of
we
him.
We never get to watch the news. We're always here.
No, we never do.
I could tell you who hosted today's show because my wife watches every day.
Okay. But does your wife watch The View?
No.
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 Is it because of Rosie, or is it just because she doesn't like the...
She has four children at home. She's too busy to
so
watch.
So she's got her own four-person panel to deal with down there.
You know, judging by phone calls, I don't know if we have any female listeners. I mean, I thought for sure that women would have some opinions on who they would want to replace Rosie O'Donnell. Maybe we should ask our male listeners who they would like to replace Rosie O'Donnell with.
All right, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I suspect it's the, I'll call it the Oprah effect. They're watching. But they don't want to say that they watch. But they do. I mean, anyone will admit to watching Regis and Kelly. Because Regis and Kelly are just two of the nicest people in the world. But when it comes to things like Oprah or The View, you watch, but you don't want to admit that you watch. Or maybe I'm wrong. 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Since the ladies won't chime in, let's see what Paul has to say. Paula? Oh, sorry. He left off the A. A brave woman calls from her car. Hi, Paula.
Hi. I kind of felt sorry for you guys, so I called in.
Oh, you don't have to feel sorry for us. They pay us either way.
No, I do not currently watch The View.
Why not?
However, mainly because of Rosie, I would have to say, but I also have children at home, so I really don't have a whole lot of time. However, if this individual was a part of the panel, I certainly would tune into it because I think it would be extremely interesting and refreshing to see a Christian conservative point of view who is actually going to speak up and as a Christian, because I know one of the panel members is a conservative, but not a Christian necessarily.
Paula, can you think of someone else if it weren't Star Parker? We heard that audio from her before. She's a conservative Christian activist. She actually works in urban renewal and development, things like that. Can you think of someone else?
No, quite honestly, I was astonished to hear her on the show. She had some very interesting things to say just from your sound bites. So, I mean, I think in some respect really fought to get that sort of an opinion on there.
Paula, thank you very much. Paula doesn't watch. She says probably due to Rosie. Who was the previous host? It was Meredith. She went on to do the Today Show, didn't she? Isn't she now the host of the Today Show?
Meredith Vieira. I don't know if she was the host. Wasn't Barbara Walters
Good
always
Morning
on there?
America. No, Barbara Walters is not the host. She's the grand matron. She just shows up when she wants to show up. She's the executive
Meredith,
producer.
The gal who Vieira, I think, is she's on the Today Show.
Today
now.
Show.
And she also does that game show that's on at night.
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Is that what
she
it is?
She took over for Regis. Yeah.
Oh,
absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was the comedian.
The what?
Who's the comedian guy? He's got a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire show. I'll bet Charlie knows.
No, you're thinking about
Deal or No Deal.
You're thinking about Deal or No
what
Deal.
What is that?
Howie Mandel.
How do you get Meredith Vieira and Howie Mandel mixed up?
Those shows are all the same. I don't know.
All right. Obviously a Luddite when it comes to pop culture, Jeff is. Well, okay, I know you're not. What about the rest of you? If you had the choice to make, who would you choose to replace Rosie O'Donnell on The View? I know this is not an earth-shaking question, but you're going to complain when they replace Rosie with the people that they choose. And it was refreshing to hear Star Parker there espousing not only a conservative, but a Christian point of view. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Wanda's calling from her car. Thanks for waiting, Wanda.
Yes, I don't watch the program very often because I have a day job, but I think it would be fun to hear Gretchen Passantino on there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Can you?
I think she could hold her own.
Oh, more than hold her own, no doubt about it. Anyone else, Wanda?
That was the only one that came to mind for me.
All right, Wanda, thank you very much. So Wanda works, and so she doesn't have opportunity to watch The View, at least here in this area of the country. I don't think Gretchen would last very long. There'd be a lot of the uncomfortable showdowns where Gretchen was kind of verbally pinning the rest of the people, and she'd probably increase the ratings, I'm sure.
There's too much emoting on that show for Gretchen.
What do you mean emoting?
I mean too much how you feel about things, and she wouldn't put up with that.
Well, that's true. I mean, after about the 10th time of someone saying "I feel" rather than I think Gretchen would probably be gone there.
You know, somebody I thought of too is regular. You mentioned Colleen Carroll Campbell, a regular guest on the show. The caller mentioned Gretchen Passantino. I think Beverly Yonke would be great.
Well, that would be
Dr. Beverly Yonke, a Christian counselor.
That's true. I think she'd probably intimidate the rest of them.
Wait, do you think anybody's going to intimidate Barbara Walters? I mean, she's interviewed just about everybody.
I think Barbara would be intimidated because she couldn't make Bev Yonke cry. I think Barbara Walters would be intimidated by anyone she couldn't make cry. So, not that she wouldn't try. It'd be interesting to see.
Well, you know, she did have that tough interview with the Dalai Lama.
That's true. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. It's Audio Open Lines this Wednesday, June the 20th on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Coming up a little later in the program, we'll be talking about this. We started it yesterday, an interview that was conducted on NBC News, I believe, with an elder from the Mormon Church. Now, this isn't just any old elder. This is a guy who was chosen to do an interview as a representative of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, kind of a far-reaching interview on what Mormons believe, what they practice, why don't they do polygamy anymore, and Mitt Romney's candidacy for the presidency, given the fact that he is a Mormon. We'll get to that in a few minutes. We're talking about The View. Rosie O'Donnell's chair is empty, so who would you choose to replace her? Star Parker was co-hosting, and she actually made the news. I mean, it's not as though we went to The View and grabbed a bunch of audio. She made the news by talking about her belief in a six-day creation in Jesus Christ. She believes that she says she is born again, her conversion to Christianity. It was all very curious. So is that the direction they should go? That would definitely be a different direction. Definitely be a different direction. Mike in Oakville, Illinois, says, I would rather watch repeats of Green Acres. Now, there's a man for you. Actually, I'd probably rather watch repeats of Green Acres than just about anything. Green Acres was hilarious. All right, let's just do this, since we're... I've got a cut sheet in front of me with 36 sound bites on it, okay, or 36 pieces of audio on it, and I'm trying to stay to my schedule because I've lost track of where the time is, but I just have to ask this question. And I won't invite the listeners, because we'll spend the next hour and a half on it. Favorite character on Green Acres, and don't tell me you didn't watch Green Acres. Favorite character on Green Acres?
Well, that's the easiest question.
What?
Zsa Zsa Gabor?
Oh.
Darling?
You disappoint me. All right, I'm going to let you chime in there. Favorite character?
Was his name Hank?
Hank.
The guy that would start every sentence over and over again, and he would change course, take 20 detours in the middle of one sentence.
I don't remember what his name was, but a great character actor.
He was a handyman or something.
Yeah, well, you know who I liked? The guy who was always calling the main character Dad. Maybe we're thinking of the same guy. He'd walk in and say and call him Dad. He was of no relation.
See, I think his character's name was Jeb or something.
Jeb, something along those lines.
Not that I watched every night or anything.
Well, I would have. It was Green Acres, Petticoat Junction, and there was another one that they had there. Now, a lot of people would have said Arnold the Pig. I'm surprised you didn't say that. You said Zsa Zsa Gabor. This surprises me. Susan in Tupelo, Mississippi writes us, this woman does not watch The View. That's Susan, I believe. No stomach for the back and forth, for the usual subject matter, for the feministic showdowns and all the crosstalk. It's rude, often crude, hyper-emotional, and not all that thoughtful. Why don't they go for a man co-host, though? Me? She says I should be... No. First of all, no face for television. They're not going to choose a man because the whole premise of The View is to get the woman's viewpoint. It's The View, you see, the view of the women, which I represent very poorly, I can assure you, Susan. She says, I don't watch Oprah either, nor Dr. Phil. I did, however, watch The Sopranos, often with one eye shut. My kind of girl, although I have to admit to having a fondness for Dr. Phil. It's my weakness, okay? When on my day off, I leave the room when Oprah is on because I can't stand her giving away all that stuff. But when Dr. Phil's on, I'm there. I'll admit to it. Yesterday, we started a conversation with you during Audio Open Lines. We were listening to an interview on NBC News with a Mormon elder who was being asked a series of far-flung questions about Mormonism, its beliefs, its practices, and Mitt Romney. And we had to stop right at a really interesting point because time ran out. This Mormon elder was talking about how he felt about the Mormons' portrayal as being cultish, and the subject of polygamy came up. Let's pick up with that question.
It must pain you when people criticize you in that manner and dismiss your church as being something that is cultish or out there, if you will. How do you respond to that, and how do you explain why you think that there is more to that particular part of the faith, the Bible, than what's there for most Christians?
Well, our position is that we believe the Bible is the Word of God. We use the Bible. But we also believe that the Bible, in its process of translation and its process of evolving into what we currently have, we use the King James Version of the Bible. That it's a great thing that Revelation is still alive. We don't believe that anyone on the earth has the right to say to God, you cannot talk to us anymore. What's in the Bible is all you're ever going to have. We don't believe that's within the jurisdiction of his children to do that. And so we have the Book of Mormon, and the Book of Mormon is the dealings of our Heavenly Father's with his children that lived in the Americas. And there's some clarification doctrinally. Now, it's one of the reasons we get the people think we're a cult is that in the early days of the church, the church practiced polygamy. We have not had that as a principle in the church for 115 years. Now, that's a principle that was practiced and not practiced off and on all through the Old Testament days. Why the Lord instructed polygamy to be practiced for a short season in the church, we don't know all the reasons. We do know this, that some of the offspring that came from those polygamous families carried the gospel out into the world.
All right. I need to correct something here. The Mormon elder has said two things. First of all, he said, look, the Bible, he said it several times in the interview, that they take the Bible seriously, all right? But they don't take it as seriously as they take the Book of Mormon. You may have heard this yesterday when he said the Bible through its translation, he sounded just like Bart Ehrman or John Shelby Spong or any liberal Bible scholar. He said the Bible through its translation, its transmission, and its evolution to what it's become today was corrupted. And so they needed another testament of Jesus Christ, the Book of Mormon. Now, if you're a Mormon, that's what you're supposed to believe. I'm telling you, in all seriousness, you're supposed to believe that the Book of Mormon is not corrupted, but the Bible is. Or it's corrupted in its understanding, and the Book of Mormon should be used to help understand it. Now, on the issue of polygamy, he cites the fact that the Old Testament patriarchs practiced polygamy. And then he says that the Lord instructed the practice of polygamy for a short time in the Mormon church during the era of Joseph Smith and Brigham Young and a couple of generations after that, and then stopped. Now, that's a connection I can't permit him to make. The Lord never instructed polygamy in the Old Testament. Never. He permitted it. Or I should say, he tolerated it. But Jesus makes it quite clear in the New Testament. This is why Jesus is the first. This is, you want to know how to interpret the Old Testament, ask Jesus first. Okay? Jesus is the interpreter of the Old Testament par excellence. So Jesus tells us, when he's answering a question about divorce, he says divorce, although it was permitted, was not God's original intent. And he would say, I am certain, the same thing about polygamy. Polygamy, although it was permitted, was not God's original intent. So the Mormon elder has made kind of a very subtle connection that we need to flag in red. He said, look, it's like the Old Testament. They did it, but God never commanded it in the Old Testament. In fact, Jesus' interpretation gives us to believe that what God commanded was one man, one woman, not one man, several women. Even though the patriarchs did practice it, the practice of polygamy was tolerated. And then he says, and by the way, you know, when we did those polygamous practices, there were more missionaries. We gave birth to more missionaries. So is polygamy right or wrong? This is what you get when you have ongoing evolving revelation that changes. God changes his mind on things. When in fact, the correct way of reading scripture is, as I said, Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. Jesus is the one who gave the commands regarding marriage, adultery. He was there present at creation when Adam and Eve were brought into being and given to one another as one man and one woman. And when he becomes incarnate in flesh and starts talking about marriage, he hasn't changed his mind. Nothing's changed. The Mormon elder says this is why Mormons have been viewed as a cult, because of polygamy. I disagree. It may have been a factor, but I think the biggest factor in Mormonism being viewed as a cult is everything else it teaches. And again, it's a cult theologically, but sociologically, I don't think we can call it a cult anymore. Not sociologically. Let's see what... we'll go to the phones here in just a second. Any reaction to the Mormon elder? We'll continue our conversation from yesterday. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Don is listening in Junction City, Kansas. Hi, Don.
Yeah, thank you, Todd. A couple Mormons were at my door a few weeks ago, and I read to them Revelation 22, 18 and 19, where it says, "For I testify to everyone who hears the words of the prophecy of this book, if anyone adds to these things, God will add to him the plagues that are written in this book." And also, And if anyone takes away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God shall take away his part from the book of life, from the holy city, and from the things which are written in this book. Now, they could not explain that to me, and it sort of caught them by surprise. And I told them that the Book of Mormon was, I would question, as being the work of Satan more than of God. They didn't have too much to say on that subject. But
yeah, it's very, you put the elders in a terrible position when you do that, because they're there to convince you that the Book of Mormon is the real deal. They're there to say, read it and let the Spirit tell you whether it's true or not, and then we'll come back and talk to you. And when you say, I don't buy your book, they got nothing. You've basically given them nothing to sell. Don, thank you very much. Well, that's a good passage to deal with when you're talking about. You notice what the Mormon elder said? He said that the Book of Mormon was a clarification of the Bible. But that's not what the Book of Mormon claims to be. It doesn't claim to be a clarification of a previous work. It claims to be more revelation, another testament, and more about Jesus. And remember, it's not just the Book of Mormon, it's also the Doctrine and Covenants and the Pearl of Great Price. So there's a lot of adding to Scripture going on there. And you're right to point it out, Don. Thank you very much. And thanks for listening in Kansas. In St. Peter's, here's Jeff. Jeff, welcome.
Yes, good afternoon, Todd. Got something from the a missionary group up in Nauvoo, very interesting couple. I want to have them on sometime. But what he had told me was, as far as the doctrine of polygamy, back when it was revealed to them, it was, thus saith the Lord. And whenever it was rescinded back in 1890, it was, to whom it may concern. So which one would you tend to take more serious?
That's a good point. And we have had the Nauvoo group on a number of times here on Issues, et cetera. They're doing great work there in Nauvoo, and really good work because Nauvoo is a gathering place for Mormons worldwide. All right. Now, I think even the Mormons admit that it was considered a command. Polygamy was considered a command. Although, if you read the history, Joseph Smith practiced it secretly before it was made public. And I'm not it's not secretly from non-Mormons, secretly even from his own flock. But it was a command. In fact, it was a stipulation that this is how women entered the celestial kingdom, by marrying a Mormon man. And that's why polygamy was considered to be, it was kind of a evangelism. You marry as many women as you can because there's several reasons. One, this is the way women get into the celestial kingdom. Two, the more children you have, the more bodies you're providing for God's soul babies in heaven, more Mormons you can have, more gods in the future as they evolve from Mormons into gods. And that was the rationale of polygamy, or at least it was the accepted rationale of polygamy. When it was rescinded, it was by an apostolic, and I use the word there with a small a, the prophet did rescind it. The prophet, whoever it was at the time, did rescind it. But if you read the history, it was done in response to Utah's bid for statehood. And unless they declared polygamy illegal in Utah, they weren't going to be accepted as a state. Pretty tangled web there. More audio open lines after this.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Dr. Arthur Just on what a young man will find every summer at Christ Academy at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
It really does put him in touch with, first of all, a community of people here who love the Scriptures, who worship together, who pray together, and who enjoy, have fun, you know, doing theology. There's just a wonderful excitement and passion for the gospel that is expressed by them. But it is a way of a young man to shape his identity as one who is in Christ and to learn the Scriptures and have a real passion for the gospel.
For more information about Christ Academy, June 17th through the 30th at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, go to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Theological Seminary, 1-800-481-2155. 1-800-481-2155.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. Unable to expand embryonic stem cell research on its own merits, House and Senate leaders are trying to tie it to must-pass legislation. It's reported that one possible target is a Health and Human Services Appropriations spending plan that funds a number of social programs for the poor. Steve Jordahl reports that won't be enough to keep it from the president's veto pen.
On pro-life issues, President Bush is firm and consistent. Douglas Johnson of National Right to Life says if leading Senate stem cell research proponent Tom Harkin of Iowa is looking to get the entire Health and Human Services Appropriations bill vetoed, then this would be the way to do it.
Senator Harkin can grandstand some more on this issue if he wants, but the fact is that the president has said he will veto any bill that weakens any of the existing pro-life policies.
Harkin and his allies are emboldened by a cooperative media that continues to feed misinformation about the research to the American people. Dr. Maureen Kondik of the University of Utah says it's not her place as a scientist to say why, but there's a great deal of confusion about stem cell legislation and stem cell science in the media.
When you read the story, the overall impression is often quite misleading and often flat out wrong.
Jean Tarn of the Coalition of Americans for Research Ethics says congressional leadership is determined to use this issue to embarrass the president.
You have a pure political situation there. They can't round up enough votes to get an override, and so they just feel they'll hold whatever other legislation is out there hostage.
He says you can count on the issue being used against pro-life candidates in the upcoming elections. For Family News in Focus, I'm Steve Jordahl.
During California's campaign to borrow $3 billion from residents, promises were made that the research would lead to many cures. A state-sponsored study released after the measure passed admitted that the investment probably would not yield a single cure. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Here at AM 850 KFUO, it's our privilege to salute our day sponsors on this Wednesday, June 20th, 2007, the members of the Schnock family. Today's day sponsors have made a contribution to AM 850 KFUO in loving memory of Aldo Schnock. Once again, we say thank you, the members of the Schnock family of St. Louis, today's AM 850 KFUO day sponsors. Where do we find Jesus in the Psalms? Reading the Psalms with Luther is our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June. For more information, look for the cover of Reading the Psalms with Luther on our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Did you know that the Psalms portray Jesus as our mighty fortress, our shepherd, and our light? Reading the Psalms with Luther, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Halfway through the program, we're listening to some audio from NBC News, an interview with a Mormon elder talking about polygamy and Mormonism as a cult. He does not believe it to be a cult, and I have said before, Mormonism is sociologically no longer a cult. In the days of its when it was sociologically, psychologically more cultish, I think that was probably true. I remember in the 70s when the big thing to do in Bible class was to learn about cults and the occult and strange religions. That's what everybody was doing. Mormonism was listed as a cult, and I think theologically it remains as cultish as it ever was. But sociologically, no. And I think that distinction is important to make because we have to deal with the situation on the ground rather than and theologically, objectively, yes, we must say that it is a cult. But it's become so mainstream and has been so successful in portraying itself as just another brand of Christianity, rather than argue the case that it's sociologically a cult, we should stick to making the case that theologically it is so divergent from Scripture. It is so divergent from Orthodox Christianity. And although you don't get dragged away in the night, you won't have your teenage girls married off unless you're a member of one of the sects of Mormonism, it is every bit as dangerous. 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Now, the candidacy for president of Massachusetts governor, or former Massachusetts governor Mitt Romney, who's a Mormon, has occasioned a lot of conversation about Mormonism. Let's hear some more from this Mormon elder. Picking up where we left off, he's talking about polygamy. He gave his rationale for polygamy. He said, well, they did it in the Old Testament, and it was a command of God for the Mormons at first, but not so much afterwards. And he says, so we don't practice polygamy anymore. We shouldn't be called a cult.
And we're the ones that were able to walk across the plains and to push hand carts and to conquer this desert valley and to settle this part of the world. We don't know all the reasons that God had in mind, but we want the world to know that we do not practice polygamy. That's over. It's been over for 115 years, and it's in back of us. So, but some reason, that's all they want to talk about. It's amazing why that can't die.
Why do you think it is that the church has such a, well, a mix? Why do you think there are so many critics of the church out there?
Well, in some ways, I think it's misunderstanding, number one. Number two, we are very successful in what we do. We've grown now to over 13 million members. We're teaching the gospel now in 146 different languages and over 165 different countries and nations. One of our major challenges is growth and managing the growth and raising up the local leadership to direct the affairs of the church out into the world. And I think some of that creates a problem where we get criticized, I think, some degree, because we are moving forward at such a wonderful, solid pace.
Interesting response. I mean, the question is, why do you think that the Mormon church comes in for so much criticism? And he essentially said, well, people are jealous. We're growing. And we're doing something right. Odd, isn't it? That's exactly the same answer that you hear from guys like Rick Warren when you say, why do you think your church or your movement or your peace plan or your 40 Days of Purpose comes in for so much criticism? He says, well, because it's growing, because it's successful. People are jealous. In fact, when he was in Birmingham, England last year, might have been last year, Rick Warren said, the only people who criticize my numbers are those who don't have them themselves. He said it's essentially jealousy. Now, that really does trivialize the serious critique of Mormonism, don't you think? I mean, there are people who have genuine concerns about what Mormons teach and really couldn't give two hoots whether it's growing or shrinking or successful or failing. There are people who have looked at Mormonism. There are people who have come out of Mormonism. We had one on the program a couple months back, a woman who came out of the Reformed LDS Church, the Independence, Missouri Mormons, although they don't call themselves Mormons anymore. And she had written a book about whether or not they're Christian, coming to the conclusion they're not. She spent the better part of her life as that brand of a Latter-day Saint. And her concern is not their success or their growth. Her concern is what they teach. Usually when you hear someone, why do you come in for so much criticism? And their answer is, well, because we're successful and they're not. They're trying to avoid the real reason for critique, whether it's Mormon or otherwise. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2722. I know why there are critics of Issues, etc. It has nothing to do with our success. Can't make that big of a case for our success. Although I'm thankful to have what we have, it's not because we're big or growing or successful. It's because of what we teach. That's the reason for the criticism. And the same is true of the Mormons. They're criticized for what they teach. And I haven't heard a lot of criticism of polygamy lately, except for the Warren Jeffs crowd. And that criticism hasn't come from Christian apologists or Christian critics, but it's come from the state. In fact, I think it's the state of Utah and Nevada that criticism came from, in the form of some jail sentences.
You said that you do know Governor Romney, and obviously he's someone you feel very positively about. What have you said to him about what he should do when asked about his faith and when this becomes an issue for people? I'm not trying to make you a political consultant,
yes,
but as a spiritual advisor, as a fellow Mormon, as someone who who obviously loves and believes and practices this faith and doesn't want to see it become something that it's not in public. What would you say to the governor about how he should deal with this whole matter?
Well, number one, I would say to Governor Romney, you're a faithful, wonderful Latter-day Saint, and we respect your faith and your beliefs, and do not let anything waver you from what you know to be true. I would also say you understand, Governor, that the church cannot support you, or can we support Harry Reid's party or anyone else's party. We will support what is right. We ask our people to think through carefully on their own what is needed and who can best give the leadership to solve the current needs. That's where we are, because we have members of the church that are in both parties and all parties. So we just simply do not get involved in the issue of supporting candidates. But we encourage our people to be actively involved in the political process, to seek out in their own minds, and then to do what they need to do that they feel within their own hearts is right.
Because some people are concerned that if the governor were president, that he would, Salt Lake City would be running the country and the nation, and I suspect you would say you have other things to do.
Yeah. Well, we have a message to carry, the message of the restoration to the world. We're not going to get and would not get involved in telling anyone what they're going to do or not do. But one thing that I know Governor Romney well enough to know, that I don't think anybody's going to be telling him to do something that he doesn't believe right down in his own heart is the right thing to do. He's that kind of a man. And as we have many good people that are serving in public service, it's interesting. We have 5 senators that are members of the church. We have 11 members in Congress that are now members of the church. 2 governors that are sitting today that are members of the church. We don't tell them how to vote and what to do. We're too busy trying to watch these 54,000 missionaries around the world that are carrying our message to the people about the restoration.
Would that American evangelicals had the same kind of attitude toward elected officials from within their own ranks as does this Mormon elder? You know, we're about out now. Just don't. I'm not commending the message of Mormonism or the quote unquote missionary work done in the name of Mormonism. I'm not commending that. They're spreading false teaching, false hope, and false comfort. But the ability to distinguish between the church as what it's here for, as opposed to what Christians often think the church is here for. Isn't it odd that the Mormons, you know, the Mormonism was built on building the kingdom of God here on earth to get ready for Christ's second coming. And here's a Mormon saying, you know, we are just not that worried about politics. And we're far more concerned about doing mission work. Odd that you hear that from a Mormon and not from a Christian. A lot of Christians awful worried about politics, worried about how their elected officials from within their ranks are going to vote, as opposed to the preaching of the true gospel. Another interesting contrast.
And just lastly, I think the bottom line is that some people out there, I don't want to say a lot, but there are people and people in the evangelical movement who, as you know, are part of a significant part of the Republican base, but not to be political about this. I think people look at the Mormon church and they think, for lack of a better word, that it's just strange. You've heard this, and I don't mean to be insulting, but just to make the point, what would you say to people who see your faith and your church in a strange way and don't quite understand and are hesitant and are pulling back from it and are doubtful about leaders who come from this particular faith?
Well, what I would say to them is come and let us explain to you what our core beliefs are. That we believe, as I've said earlier, we believe in the restoration of the gospel. In the process of that, we have a health code. We encourage our people not to smoke and not to drink and not to take anything into their body that would be destructive, to stay away from drugs, because we believe the body is really the temple of the spirit, which lives on forever, and we teach that. Some people might think that's cultage. We think it's just good sense, and it came through a revelation to the prophet Joseph Smith back in the 1830s. So way before medical science has come forward with these discoveries and instructions. I just think that if people would relax and let us explain what our message is, they may not choose to join the church, but we're going to keep telling the world the very best way we can what we believe has occurred. And we have this health code, and we pay tithing. We ask them to pay 10% of their income, and they do. And that's one of the reasons that we have the growth we do. And frankly, you know, people don't pay tithing. They don't send their children out into the world to carry this message unless they have a deep, abiding belief that, in fact, there has been a restoration. They didn't believe that, this wouldn't work. It's that simple. And so people read into it that we're cultish and we're unusual. That's because they don't know us.
All right. Again, I think we need to correct some of this. I can only speak for myself. I've never considered Mormons to be cultish because of their health code. If you want to avoid alcohol, tobacco, firearms, whatever else you want to avoid, if you want to avoid all those things and you consider that to be a healthy code to follow, a discipline to follow, more power to you. I do not consider that an element of their cultishness. Their cultishness is what they teach, not these peripheral practices. It is interesting in this. I said before this is an honest interview. I think it's honest as far as one can expect honesty in this case. The actual teachings of Mormonism, I mean, the real guts of Mormonism, about man's advancement from soul baby in heaven to God of your own creation, has not been dealt with here in any specific way. That's what makes Mormonism a cult. What makes Scientology a cult? Is it the fact that they have e-meters and people spend a lot of money to get themselves rid of their thetans and to do auditing, and that they're kind of odd, crazy, litigious organizations worldwide? Is that what makes Scientology a cult? It's part of its sociological cultish nature. What makes it a cult is what it teaches. Not all the odd little things. So I have no problem with their health code. What they teach is a whole different matter. They can avoid caffeine till the cows come home. What is genuinely dangerous about Mormonism is that they teach a different Jesus, a different way of salvation, a different God. And that's what's genuinely cultish about it. Now, he says, ironically, if people would understand us better, then they could get over all these little quibbles that they have with us thinking that we're a cult. That's why I think it's very important that we say, sociologically, they're no longer cultish. Because it's not about the little quibbles. It's not about whether or not they practice polygamy. It's not about whether or not they drink Coke or smoke cigarettes. That's not it. It's what they teach about Jesus Christ, salvation, eternal life, God. And it is interesting that all of those things in this interview, plenty of time given to talk about the heart and center of Mormon teaching, plenty of time, opportunity given in the interviewer's questions, none of those things raised with any specificity. Let's hear the last minute or so of this interview with a Mormon elder.
The people, when they come to know us, they come here. We've had so many that have come and met us and seen what we're trying to do, see what we're trying to do in humanitarian service. We've put over $800 million out into the world in humanitarian services. We don't broadcast that every day, but maybe that's been a mistake. Maybe we need to tell people more what we're doing and trying to help those who are suffering and who are poor and who are having struggles. Maybe that's partly our problem. We haven't told as well as we should who we are and what our message is.
You know, I think they have, but their message isn't all the good works that they're doing. Look, Mormon money spends as easily as Christian money, atheist money, Muslim money, Jewish money. It all spends the same way. And I do not begrudge them the good works that they're doing, the charitable work, the humanitarian efforts. More power to them. But that's not the heart and center of what Mormonism teaches. Is that, if you're a Mormon, and I know we have Mormon listeners, if you're a Mormon, that's why you're a Mormon? Because of all the good they're doing around the world? I mean, if there was an interview with a Christian leader, and it was as vague as this on the heart and center of what Christians believe, if it were as vague as this about the specifics of what makes Christianity different from any other world religion, I'd be disappointed. And I have to ask our Mormon listeners, are you disappointed with this portrayal of what you believe? Well, we're not a cult because we don't practice polygamy. Don't think we're a cult because we have these health codes. Look at all the good we're doing. And if you just learned about us, you wouldn't think we're so strange anymore. I don't think Mormons are strange. I think they're normal people. Their teachings are not scriptural. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Of course, the story of Mitt Romney has occasioned all this conversation about Mormonism. Here's another cut on Mormonism. It comes from ABC News. It's a story on how Romney's competitors, at least two of them, have been dealing with the issue of Romney's Mormonism.
Republican presidential candidate and former governor of Massachusetts Mitt Romney is currently leading in some polls in some states. And now, behind the scenes, some of his opponents have started questioning the tenets of his Mormonism. ABC's senior political correspondent Jake Tapper reads between the lines.
Welcome, Governor Mitt Romney.
Many of the same conservative evangelical Christians that former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney is trying to woo have concerns about his religion, Mormonism. And two rival campaigns have sent out emails in recent weeks questioning different tenets of Mormonism. Emma Nemesek, a paid field director for the presidential campaign of Kansas Senator Sam Brownback, sent out this email from her personal account questioning whether Mormonism is truly a Christian religion. Quote, "The LDS Jesus is not the same Jesus of the Christian faith," it said. "The LDS Church has never been accepted by the Christian Council of Churches." A campaign staffer for former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani sent out an email containing a news story about a controversial Mormon prophecy that a Mormon will save the U.S. Constitution. Both campaigns have apologized for bringing faith into this debate. But Romney himself has opened the door for some questions, seeming to blur the distinction between his church and mainstream Christianity.
In your faith, if I understand it correctly, it teaches that Jesus will return probably to the United States and reign on earth for 1,000 years.
That doesn't happen to be a doctrine of my church. Our belief is, just like it says in the Bible, that the Messiah will come to Jerusalem, stand on the Mount of Olives, and that the Mount of Olives will be a place where there's the great gathering and so forth. It's the same as the other Christian tradition.
But a Mormon church official told a Utah newspaper columnist that, quote, "We believe in multiple appearances of the Savior in both Jerusalem and Jackson County, Missouri." Quote, "Brother Romney is playing a little bit of a political game with his answer. It seems likely more games will be played on this sensitive subject in the coming months." Jake Tapper, ABC News, Washington.
You see, now this is precisely the kind of situation that Romney and his campaign have wanted to avoid, and that is getting specific on what Mormons teach. Now, Romney's tack up to this point has been, look, the American people don't care what I believe. I'm a man, a spiritual man, a man of faith. And that's what the American people are looking for. They're not particularly concerned about what that faith is. Although it's hard to avoid this, isn't it? I mean, if you're going to run as a Mormon, and I'm sure that they've made provision for this, but if you're going to run as a Mormon, you are going to have to eventually, not in debates and things like that. I agree, it's irrelevant, but you're going to have to eventually answer some questions. about what it is you were, because most people, when they think Mormon, don't know what Mormons believe. Probably half of them believe they're Christians. The other half have no idea, have no point of reference whatsoever. And he is a very outspoken Mormon, as are many of the others who serve in elected office. So it's unavoidable. The question is, will it be detrimental to his run for the presidency? If someone runs as a Christian, or not runs as a Christian, someone who is a Christian runs for office, we have, in the 24-hour media cycle, we have long passed the point, because you got to have something to talk about, long past the point where those things were off limits. Now, when the first President Bush ran, he's an Episcopalian. People were not inquiring into his Episcopal views, his Anglican views. They weren't, because more mainstream. Now, if he were running again as a member of the Episcopal Church USA, you know he would be asked questions, especially given the turmoil in that church body. He'd be asked about a gay bishop. He'd be asked about the relationship of the Episcopal Church USA on issues like gay marriage, wouldn't he? It would all be fair game. So I think what's happening here to Romney is really nothing other than that would happen to anyone who's a person of faith, to use Romney's term, where questions are being raised, people are curious, and in many cases simply don't know what it is you believe. Should it have any bearing on whether or not someone's qualified to be president? No, probably not. But are the questions fair game? Sure, they are. In the next hour of Issues Etc., I'm going to talk to Dr. David Prentice of the Family Research Council. The president, of course, has vetoed, again, federal funding for embryonic stem cell research. His opponents say it isn't over, not yet. And then we'll open up the phone lines and take your email on the military's attempt to make what was called a gay bomb. A watchdog group says that the Pentagon seriously considered it, and they think still have plans of along these lines. I'm very anxious to hear from you on that. Should homosexuality be used as a weapon at a time of war? Our Issues Etc. book of the month for June is Reading the Psalms with Luther. It's just the book of Psalms with prefaces to each from Luther himself, pointing you to Christ in each and every psalm, as you should be. Find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org. The book's right there on the homepage, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and ask them about Reading the Psalms with Luther, our Issues Etc. book of the month for June. Their number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to discuss Confession of Sins Online. MZ Hemingway of GetReligion.org will be our guest. We'll also talk with the Deaconess Pam Nielsen about God answering Gideon's prayer. It's a famous Old Testament Bible story. And we'll discuss Bart Ehrman's book, Misquoting Jesus, with Dr. Timothy Paul Jones tomorrow on the program. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk a little bit about the president's veto of federal funding for embryonic stem cell research. Stay tuned.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues Etc.